Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You are listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, also on Facebook and Instagram. You guys are also on iTunes. That's right, we're on iTunes. Finally, the trendsetter Brian Berga and I am Jeff Martin here with another week here and a big announcement, man. Can you believe it? WrestlePro is in our future. We have a big announcement coming up too about that. Brian, how are you, man? How's everything? Busy week for us as we, you know, tease it on Twitter before, and we finally made the deal. The deal is done, and I'm sure, Brian, you want to tell all the High Spot Podcast fans exactly what is that big info.
Well, that big info is, first of all, it's great to be back on the show. A week goes by really fast, and believe it or not, before you know it, so much stuff to talk about. We have only a limited amount of time to do it, but, you know, the big announcement is basically we have gone out of our way to the events of WrestlePro, whether it's in Rahway, whether it's in Sayreville, New Jersey.
You're in Brooklyn, dude.
That's Brooklyn, crazy. New York, you know, traveling with them and really trying to cover them and paying them justice, too, because when you have I'm not kissing butt here, but when you have a promoter like Pat Buck and the talent he puts out there and the hard work that everybody does to make it a great show, and our boy Dave Destruction not only ring announcing but pulling double duty to commentating as well, you see that appreciation, that passion they have, and they try to give back to the audience that are paying their good hard-earned money. So we wanted to go there, follow them, do what we can to help promote WrestlePro, as we've talked about several times in several weeks here on the show as the months have gone by. Now we will finally be in Rahway, New Jersey on May 20th, basically sponsoring WrestlePro and kind of being a part of their festivities as they have, you know, Cody Rhodes' main event and basically bringing in all the money for WrestlePro. And, you know, it's just going to be exciting because we're going to be doing a show from there. And we're going to bring in,
we'll, you know, be there live, Dave, in person.
Dave Destruction. We're going to meet some of the fans. Hopefully they'll come by, talk to us a little bit.
Don't be shy.
Giving shirts away. Tickets for the following event would be on July 10th.
On June 10th.
June 10th. With Stu Bennett, a.k.a. Bad News Barrett. So just a lot of exciting things going on. And we can't wait to talk to some of the talent that's there because, you know.
Yep.
For them, they are what make WrestlePro as successful as it is because you see the work ethic that they put in, and it's definitely appreciated not only by the fans, but by us here on the High Spot Podcast.
So again, announcement number one, we will be in Rahway, New Jersey, May 20th, Saturday night, bell time, 7:30 p.m. That's where it all starts. We will be there, so come say hi to the Jersey Wrecking Crew. We will be sponsoring WrestlePro. We'll have our own table. Also, we will be doing a live kind of maybe pre-show from there too, so we will be covering all of that night's festivities. Also too, again, like I said, Cody Rhodes is headlining it, but not only that, you got Joey Janela, you've got also too Cole Cabana, and of course, formerly known as Simon Gotch, he will be there also too at WrestlePro too, so you get a chance to meet him. Head down there. It's a great event, and you know, we can finally say we are WrestlePro. So that's going to be exciting, and you know, just big things. Also, that night, all you have to do is subscribe to the show, take a screenshot on iTunes that you follow the High Spot Podcast, and we'll be giving away two tickets for June 10th in Keyport, New Jersey, the big event for WrestlePro there too, where, you know, another great event too on June 10th. So much to do. Again, the shirts will be there for sale for High Spot Podcast. Come say hi, buy a shirt. You know, a lot of surprises that we have will, you know, in the next coming weeks, but still, man, it is going to be a huge, huge show.
It will. I'm excited for it. I can't wait for it. But again, before we get to there, we got to talk about what's going on right now in the world of professional wrestling, mainly WWE.
Exactly. And, of course, we have a great guest on the show, Justin Henry, who is a writer for What Culture and also Fight Spirit magazine. He's got a little retrospective on The Undertaker. He'll join us as today's guest. Also had a great a book that he co-authored about WWE in 1997-98. Very key dates there when you had the whole Montreal screw job. So lots of stuff that happened in 97-98 for the WWF. So he co-authored that. So Justin Henry joins us in a few. But again, dude, a very lackluster European tour, Raw, actually, for WWE. Just your thoughts in general, man. I mean, again, it's lackluster and, you know, not really worth talking about.
Now we're talking about, we're going to have to, though, because the mere fact is that, you know, as much as Raw is consistently lackluster, Jeff, we go to SmackDown Live, and to me, a very disappointing show in that sense because, again, it was taped, it was overseas, you would think the crowd would be more into it, basically the fact that they're promoting Backlash, which was the Go Home SmackDown live show before Backlash started, and the debut of Shinsuke Nakamura, as they've been holding off for the fans to watch against Dolph Ziggler. So all that anticipation kind of didn't come to fruition. So, you know, this is the first time you and I are most likely, as this is the start of the new WWE season, in my opinion, after WrestleMania. You know, we got through Payback, and now it's like, okay, now we're going to separate entities. Each promotion is going to have their own pay-per-view. You know, this won't be the first time you and I are talking about lackluster shows and lackluster go-home shows, but to me, this is very disappointing. Coming off a lot of momentum that you and I spoke about before with a very surprising Payback pay-per-view where both brands were showcased on that pay-per-view leading to these storylines now, I just feel like they've kind of either they've run out of time or they felt that they promoted enough, which you can never put them over enough, folks, that there was enough to suffice the fact that they're going to be overseas for that week. To me, disappointing and completely didn't fall through.
And again, lackluster storylines and recycled storylines that you get with The Miz and you know, Dean Ambrose. And again, too, like Kurt Angle, like I think Justin Henry mentions that he mentions about his puppy being sick. So, but what's the excuse for the other past Raws? You know what I mean? Like, we want to see more Kurt Angle.
Hey, if I was the general manager of Raw, too, and they had these shows to work with, I wouldn't want to show up either.
Yeah, so it's been a really, you know, kind of tough couple of Raws to get through. And, you know, we'll see if, you know, when they get back, we'll get better shows. But, you know, another huge injury to the WWE, and that's Braun Strowman. Now, you know, this guy, you could say, probably has the most momentum right now out of anybody, anyone. And he's out 48 weeks with an elbow injury. Really tough pill to swallow, especially when that's probably the guy that was going to main event Great Balls of Fire in July against Brock Lesnar.
Well, I have to admit that I'm kind of happy that he's not going to be main eventing that pay-per-view.
And say,
I
will Great not, Balls of Fire.
I will not say the name at all because to me it's an embarrassment for the fact that you don't want to call it Bad Blood, but you want to actually, because it's not PG, but you want to call it Great Balls of Fire, which now I finally said it.
Great Balls of Fire.
And that's not going to get old at all. Is to me makes no sense.
You're going to punch before July.
You know, why not the Great American Bash? Why not recycle some of these old pay-per-views that they've done for WCW? But again, they want to use that.
Hey, Slamboree would be better, wouldn't it be?
Slamboree. I don't know why they don't reproduce Starrcade, although it is theoretically the WrestleMania for WCW.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't touch that. Doesn't I like Slamboree better.
All right, well, you know, to each their own there, Jeff.
Starrcade.
But, all right, shut up, Jeff. Let me talk, you moron. Yeah, but again, yeah, it's disappointing that Braun Strowman's not there. I don't think he's gonna lose any momentum, but the mere fact that now you're gonna have to support a card when your main rivalry, which is Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, is now on the shelf for a period of time. Not a great way to start, not a great way to begin to start promoting a pay-per-view when you know your two main attractions most likely won't be there. But then, Jeff, I've heard rumors, the mere fact, too, that you know, eventually when this rivalry does come to a tail end, you're thinking how much more can they take before both of them are going to be carried in stretchers and tipping their own ambulances over. You know, that Roman Reigns might be going into a rivalry with The Miz. To me, it's pretty interesting. It's something different. We haven't seen it before, but what can The Miz say?
It's just going to ruin his steam.
Equivalent to John Cena when he tried to butcher him on the microphone. What more can we do to bury The Miz?
If there's one thing that you saw, that The Miz actually came out on top again last Raw, and I have no problem with that, but now if you're going to put him with a you know, kind of a program, small program with Roman Reigns, there's no way The Miz is going to get over on that. And, you know, it's going to be a squash. And then kind of feel bad for The Miz because it's going to be back to square one. You've seen 2 weeks where The Miz has come out on top on Raw, which, you know, when he debuted, you're like, oh, crap, you know, they're going to, you know, kill him. Why is he on Raw? So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Roman Reigns there and The Miz. I want to see how they incorporate just an angle like that so quickly. But again, injuries do hurt and they never end. They happen, you know, just when you least expect it. And hopefully Braun Strowman comes back. Maybe he gets pushed to a matchup for SummerSlam against Brock. But who would you put right now in that main event at Great Balls of Fire against Brock Lesnar for the Universal title?
Yeah, I couldn't think you're more annoying than you already are.
But oh, really baby, are guess what? Annoying. Yeah. Since we're working for WrestlePro now, I'm more confident, more excited.
God, I just want to punch you right now, Jeff. I'm joking. Not really. Now, who do you put in that main event? It's a tough one. You know why?
Finn Balor, the man that deserves a rematch for his title that he had to give up.
Right now, storyline-wise, that would probably make the most sense, Jeff, but I don't even know if you want to use it up for a situation like this. You know, you know me. I'm always the kind of person, like, you know, save it. Save it for a big event like SummerSlam or Survivor Series or something like that. But in this case, I think that might be the road they're going to be going on right now, which I feel would be unfair because...
Can you do a Finn Balor impression of him saying, Great Balls of Fire?
I can't do an impression. I know what he does to Seth, says to Seth Rollins, where he's like, the only thing you're going to be handed to you, Brock Lesnar, is your ass.
That great balls of fire.
Okay, well, you know, maybe that's the way you go, but I just think it's an injustice right now, because I feel as Finn Balor has come back, I wasn't naive enough to think he would start right where he left off. He had lost a lot of momentum. They're going to do that documentary. I thought they were waiting to do that before they brought him in to do the same thing they did with Seth Rollins, give and deliver the anticipation of his return. But despite the fact that he competed for the number one contendership for the Intercontinental title, the fact that he's forgiven Seth Rollins for injuring him, I'm like, where are you going with a guy like Finn Balor right now? I mean, we've spoken before about a guy like AJ Styles too, Jeff. You know, AJ Styles is no spring chicken. Finn Balor is in the prime of his career. Are you really going to be withering away and wasting him and just kind of putting him in this scenario with Brock Lesnar if that does happen because Braun Strowman got injured? No. He should have been in that position to begin with. But again, I just feel, yes, it makes sense storyline-wise. Not being long-winded here, I'm sorry. But again, I don't think that's the right direction to go. But it most likely will be, because in terms of babyface and heel, that's what you want to do. And I just feel it's going to be bad for Finn Balor, because it's not going to lead to him regaining and reclaiming his Universal
title. You think Jinder Mahal looked big in front of Finn Balor? I cannot wait to see what would happen with a face-to-face between him and Brock Lesnar. That is really a David
The only intriguing Goliath. Thing about this is not only the fact that Finn's trying to reclaim what was rightfully his and he never lost, but this is the classic. We talked about Daniel Bryan, right, and Brock Lesnar getting in the ring one time. You know, these two, this is even more David versus Goliath, because Finn Balor is even smaller than Daniel Bryan. So if you put these two together, talk about Suplex City. I'm surprised, you know, at this point, if they do get into the ring together, Brock Lesnar won't suplex Finn Balor into the top rows.
I want to get to SmackDown really quick, but sure. You mentioned a name that's very intriguing. That's Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, surfing the web, and I was looking at Daniel Bryan interview. And congratulations to
him and his
baby
wife.
Girl, Birdie. You know, that's her name, Birdie. So congratulations to Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella. Best of luck. Best wishes here from the High Spot Podcast. But an interesting
interview. And say goodbye to sleep for the rest of your life.
Yep. So that's why he was gone for a while from talking smack, too. He's probably, you know, taking care of Brie, which is awesome. And again, congratulations. But interesting interview where he's kind of preparing for wrestling after his WWE career is over. You know, WWE most likely will never, ever, you know, clear him to wrestle in a WWE ring.
No, they won't. They've made that perfectly clear.
I used to think, hey, it won't happen because Brie will be like, yeah, you got a family to think about. If he is not suffering from any symptoms, you know, should he be allowed to continue his wrestling career someplace else? It looks like he's training for it. And at first, when I tell you, Brian, you know, the chances of him coming back are slim to none, I'm kind of starting to believe that we will at least see one match between Daniel Bryan and somebody, whether it's Ring of Honor. Not sure about Impact, but maybe somewhere in New Japan. But I don't think Daniel Bryan's career is over.
I don't think it's over either. I think I've really been the only one really consistent about that, from just what you hear, what he says during interviews, how he's felt. And obviously, as when he did retire actively as a wrestler for WWE, he talked about how he'd have seizures and those things. He would try to hide.
I thought that would have been the...
from his wife. But again, it depends on the person. Depends on the individual. I'm sure he's thought about this. I'm sure he's discussed it over with his wife. Now he's got a true family to think about with his daughter. I don't think it's going to be a one and done for him. Here's the thing. I don't know what WWE will do in order to counter this, because, you know, he's going to live out his contract. He's
year and a half, I think, left.
He's got a year and a half left.
And
he's
then 90 days, no compete.
Exactly. I think what WWE will try to do is eventually try to re-sign him, with the likelihood of trying to promise him that they would somehow clear him, but again, trying to hold back on the word and you know, not do that. As for Daniel Bryan, I think, yeah, I don't think his wrestling career is over. I don't think it's going to be a long wrestling career after his contract expires with WWE, but again, I don't think it's going to be a one and done either. I can easily see him go to Ring of Honor. I can easily see him go to, you know, New Japan for a small stint there, and that's it. Because I think ultimately what I feel is going on with Daniel Bryan, though I don't know him personally, I don't know what's going on in his head of his, I think he just wants to end it on his terms. He wants to do one more go-around and say,
you know what,
at least I walked away knowing that I at least finished doing what I wanted to do. You never want to walk away when people are kind of telling you can't do it when you still feel you can. Now, again, I know your emotions toward it. You don't want him to further risk anything, because when it comes to injuries to the head, they're very worrisome. But at the same time, hey, Daniel Bryan's his own man.
He's a big boy, man.
If he wants to do this, he has every right to do it.
If Brie... And, you know, if Brie thinks it's fine and she's okay with it, and, you know, you realize, you know, hey, now I have a family, so, you know, one or two or three times, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's your choice. And, you know, also the fan of me would be like, yo, let's do it. I want to see him again, you know, the exactly. selfish part. So, you know, again, we just, you know, hope the very best for Daniel Bryan and Brie, though. Congratulations.
Do you think he'll be wrestling again?
Yeah, I agree now. I think that, you know, it's not if, it's when. Yeah. So, yeah, so, and then just SmackDown real quick as they get ready for Backlash. And just a couple of things, you know, before we get to Justin Henry, and that is, listen, I got to tell you one thing. Very entertaining, and I'm glad they've been given a chance, and that's Breezango. I mean, that whole Fashion Police thing is just, again, it's just them being funny and them being allowed to do their thing, and I think it's great. And if you would have told me that Tyler Breeze and Fandango would have an opportunity for the tag team titles on a pay-per-view at Backlash in Chicago, I would have been like, hell no. But kudos to them. And, you know, I hope that, you know, they continue success with this whole Fashion Police. It's just a great thing, and I'm happy for them.
Well, not just kudos to them, Jeff. I'm really excited as well. And kudos to the WWE. I don't give them enough credit. But when you talk about Jinder Mahal and then Breezango, to see these individuals, these three individuals, Tyler Breeze, Jinder Mahal, and Fandango, Johnny Curtis.
I
said, why don't I say
Sloppy
Justin?
Kisser.
Sloppy Kisser, exactly, according to Carly Perez. But I'm just glad that they're getting this opportunity. I think it's a one-time deal, and what I mean by that is that this is their one opportunity. Either it pays off and you're successful or you don't. I think all three of them will live up to the billing, especially Breezango. I think the crowd's getting behind them. The vignettes they're doing with the Fashion Police is great, funny. You see their personalities involved in it. And with Jinder Mahal, for example, you hope that he delivers a great match against Randy Orton, because to me, that's going to be the equivalent of where he goes onto the roster after this
match. I know next week we're going to preview Backlash, but out of the three matches, Owens, Styles, Nakamura, Dolph Ziggler, Mahal, and Orton, there is no way in hell Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton closes out that show.
You don't think they'll close out that show?
No, I think it's going to be AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. Or they might, you know, really push Nakamura and have that a classic between Ziggler and Nakamura, which I think they can do. So, but I do not think that the WWE title will be the final match, because I think the crowd will overtake it. They won't give, they'll hinder Jinder, and they'll be chanting CM Punk in the whole match.
So you really feel that's what's going to happen? They're going to now, I guess what AJ Styles has been alluding to in interviews, that he wants to make the United States title similar to the Intercontinental title. They want to bring prestige back to it. So you think, you know, that closes the event?
Yep. And I might think Randy and Jinder open it up.
That would be actually pretty surprising. It would be very unique, something different. And I know how people always speak about, we want something different. We hate seeing the same thing over and over again. I'm always been a huge stickler. I always thought that the championship should be the main event, the last one too. But hey, I've even changed that mindset too, because when it comes to the rivalry or the match everybody else wants to see, that should be the main event. That's what should be selling the card. If you can't do that with the championship nowadays, it's more of the individual that makes that event more special.
So, again, though, has there ever been an afterthought in your mind that they would actually main event this match?
Who, Jinder Mahal and Randy?
No, Dumbo and Bambi.
Well, when did Dumbo and Bambi get on the card?
They just signed, actually, last week.
Now you know how frustrating it is to get a stupid answer to the question like that, right, Jeff? When I have to hear you say great balls of fire 15
great times. Balls of fire.
I'm going to slap you, I swear to God. But, I thought they were going to main event. I thought they were going to give Jinder the chance to main event to see how he did under that pressure. But
I'll give you a week to think about that. I don't think so. And we'll talk about
storyline wise, it wouldn't make any sense. Everybody's building up to the anticipation of AJ and Kevin Owens. But I think as the test to see, you know what, we want to see if Jinder can draw, that's your biggest test, and that's your opportunity. I mean, are they really going to suffer if AJ and Kevin Owens are first? No.
No, we'll preview Backlash, and I'll have a few choice words about Randy Orton, actually, too, because I don't think this whole thing is on Jinder. I think it's actually on the champion at the time. So I'll have my words and thoughts on Randy Orton and Backlash next week when we preview it. Of course, it's Sunday, May 21st. And, of course, listen, right now we've got Justin Henry. He did a great piece for Fight Spirit magazine, and it's actually available right now if you click on the link and then go check it out too. It's on The Undertaker. It's a retrospective. You know, he has a final match, what most likely was a final match at WrestleMania against Roman Reigns. So, you know, we talk about that. We also talk about the lackluster Raw overseas in Europe, and we also talk about some, you know, cruiserweights, and we talk about Roman Reigns, of course. How can we have an interview without talking about Roman Reigns? But a very interesting piece on Justin Henry. Interesting piece with Justin Henry. You can follow him on Twitter at JRH Writing. So definitely, you know, support the guy. And this is our interview right now with the man himself, Justin Henry. All right, we are joined here by Justin Henry. He's a awesome writer for Fight Spirit Magazine and also a contributor for What Culture. Of course, it's a very popular read, too, if you're a wrestling fan. Also co-author of Titan Screwed, a comprehensive story about the WWF at the time between 1997 and 1998. Lots to talk about there, but, you know, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Justin. Justin, how is everything going, my man?
Everything is going good, and thank you for having me on.
All right, so as we were, you know, talking about, you know, Raw, we're going to get to Raw in a little bit, but, you know, you're working on a piece here, a retrospective on The Undertaker. How's that going?
It actually just came out today in Fighting Spirit Magazine, something I'm very proud to have written. It's a retrospective on his career, just looking back at it kind of an artistic point of view as to what Undertaker and Mark Calloway meant to professional wrestling and WWE in general. It's very hard to quantify a 26-year run as the same character in just 3,500 words. So, you know, articulating what he meant and pointing out why he was so unique, it's a lot harder than it sounds, really.
Oh, no, yeah, it would take forever. Justin, we read that piece, very well written. But my question to you is, when you were watching the event itself, WrestleMania, and saw Roman Reigns spear The Undertaker, what were the first emotions going through you in terms of, was it your childhood? I mean, what was going through you when you found out this was most likely, maybe 99.9% Undertaker's last match?
Well, I kind of had an inkling a while back that this was going to be the end. Is, you know, you just watch him over the last few years, and it's pretty clear that he didn't have a whole lot longer left as, you know, even a once-a-year performer. And seeing him in this year's Royal Rumble match, where he was moving, you know, very glacially around the ring, he is 52 years old. And even when you're working one match a year, when it's going to be a 20-minute epic at WrestleMania, you know, it's a lot harder than it sounds. And just when I heard that Taker and Reigns is going on last, I had a feeling that that was going to be, you know, plug pulled. And even sites like, you know, The Observer, Dave Meltzer, have been saying for a while that this was going to be the end of Roman. I mean, end of Undertaker.
Yeah, we wish the end of Roman.
Some people do.
Yeah.
But it's, it didn't really bother me because I kind of have like a neutral point of view on most things. I'm able to see the good and the bad, so it's not like, you know, no, don't go. He's 52 and he should be able to live his life as comfortably as possible. And in fact, he had hip surgery not long after Mania. You know, it showed you just how far gone he was physically. So,
you know, Justin, you opened up by saying, you know, Undertaker was unique. What do you think made him so unique in your eyes? What do you think made him the draw that he ended up being for over 27 years in the WWE?
Well, he was able to bring a certain gravitas to his role. If you think about it, it's a character that could have been destined for WrestleCrap, where he's wearing ghoulish makeup and he's an undead zombie. And anyone else playing that role, it would have been death. It's very hard to be convincing to, you know, when you're naked in front of the audience out there. I mean, like emotionally naked, not, you know, clothing-wise. But he just had that ability to make you believe that what he was doing was absolutely real. And in that role, you know how hard that is? You know, to convince even the most jaded fans that, you know, hey, you know, I feel no pain, and you could hit me with 100 chair shots, and I'll just keep sitting up like a zombie. And he brought a certain authority to the role and to his presence on camera. And he was kind of the heir apparent to what Andre the Giant was, that immovable monster that kind of anchors the roster. And it's very hard to pull off, and you see how many big guys Vince has brought in over the years. You know, they have failed, whether it's Giant Gonzalez or Heidenreich or just throw some names out there. Some you know big Ray guys Colley. That weren't any good.
Kevin Nash, Diesel, when he came in Diesel, he had the look but couldn't go in the ring.
Well, it depends who he worked with. There's just a lot of guys that have tried to, you know, fill that void, and, you know, whether they were push main eventers that couldn't quite, you know, follow in Taker's footsteps, or whether they were just complete flops in the mid-card. There's a lot of those guys, and And the fact that Undertaker was around for 25 years, it speaks to the fact that, you know, there was no real heir to him. You know, Andre was able to, obviously the Andre-Taker timeline, there's a gap in between, but Taker picked up right where Andre left off as that, you know, as that big man anchor. And fans called onto it because he was unique. There was no character ever that was like him. But he was able to, you know, transcend, you know, different audiences. You know, the marks loved him because he was a great character. You know, people who appreciate, you know, the nuances of wrestling were able to, you know, enjoy the fact that he was able to take this kind of, you know, edgy character and make it something that, you know, could be appreciated for its little nuances and subtleties, and the fact that eventually he became a very good performer in the ring. And he showed it in matches with guys like Michaels and Bret and Austin and many others. So he had that sort of reach over different parts of the audience, which he didn't just cater to hardcore fans, technical wrestling fans. He didn't just cater to the marks, the kids. He was able to mean something to a lot of people for a lot of different reasons, and to have that kind of range, it'll give you longevity as a performer as long as you're healthy.
Obviously, longevity is definitely, you can put the hand in hand with The Undertaker. You know, going back, you know, Vince McMahon has kind of fondness for The Undertaker, and also in due part to Kane as his, you know, greatest creations. At the end of the day, do you think that Vince has one more creation in him, or do you think that The Undertaker was his greatest creation?
It's hard to really say in Vince's case, because I think he doesn't take as many risks anymore. Anything you see in WWE these days that feels formulaic, I feel has Vince's fingerprints on it. Well, when you're a publicly traded company, and you're trying to, you know, make as much money as possible using these formulas that have been successful to varying degrees for however many years now, going back several decades, you know, you're not really inclined to try different things, so to speak, at least on a grand scale. That's why WrestleMania every year is so full of part-timers. Fans believe in The Rock. Fans believe in Goldberg, Triple H, Undertaker. It's why they litter the card. And if Stone Cold were healthy and willing, Vince would have him back in the ring also. If Shawn Michaels didn't want to stay retired, he'd be in the ring at WrestleMania too. That's why the biggest show of the year is so dependent on what worked before. And Vince has that, I think, has that same mindset, and the same general mindset is, you know, go with what has worked before. That's why John Cena was on top for 12 years, because he started the work at a point when Vince was still taking some chances. And so he was like a part-timer in training, except he was there full-time, and he won every month. Yeah. And if he lost, it was always some sort of chicanery. And I just don't know if Vince really has, you know, that willingness, you know, to think outside the box. I mean, Braun Strowman, he does strongman things. He's Goldberg in a super heavyweight's body. Where people say ooh and ah, even though he's not, you know, the most polished performer, but he does his ooh and ah things.
Yeah, definitely. When it came to Braun Strowman, Justin, I would always compare him to, you know, the equivalent of Goldberg. I even call Braun Strowman Greenberg. But, you know, the funny thing is, you made a great comparison when you wrote about The Undertaker of how, you know, he was basically after Andre the Giant, he was the second coming. He basically took over that role. Now, we spoke about Braun Strowman. Is Bray Wyatt maybe considered in that sense to take over? Or who in your mind right now, and there probably is not somebody on the roster right now, but who would you think right now on the main roster could take that void that's left by The Undertaker? Or is that something that just can't be filled up?
I don't know if it can't be filled up. I think anything's possible in wrestling. I think Braun is the closest thing. I mean, you see how a year and a half ago, fans groaned when they saw Strowman come out and attack Ambrose and Reigns, because it's like, oh great, another monster that can't wrestle. You know, he's no Cesaro, he's no Sami Zayn. And now look at him. He's doing these things every week on Raw. They're like attempts to get on World Star Hip Hop, where he's turning over ambulances and throwing guys into a dumpster and throwing guys into Christmas trees. And it's, they found, you know, ways to, you know, utilize Braun Strowman that have gotten him over. And he has risen to the occasion. He hasn't looked stupid in anything he's done, which is very, very important. It's, You know, this is a viral video world, and if anyone looks dumb for even 5 seconds, it's going to be put on YouTube before you know it, now that Vine is no longer around.
Justin, your thoughts on Undertaker, the streak? You mentioned how it was kind of like that imaginary title around the waist that everyone would go for. It was something that we'd all look, you know, couldn't wait for WrestleMania. It kind of was like the main event whenever Undertaker was there and the streak was challenged. What did you think about him losing it to Brock Lesnar? Do you think it was the right time? And then, you know, he loses to Roman here, passes the torch. Just your thoughts in general of should the streak have ended?
I was actually someone that defended it. And even though a lot of people were very pissed off that it happened, and I understand why, it's a smudge that can't come off. And it's, you know, people who are Taker fans are just fans of the streak and its existence. You know, it ruined it for them. But to me, it was a moment that took even the most jaded know-it-all fan and it reduced them to, oh my God, did that just happen? Yeah. Those moments are few and far between for the fans that, you know, obsess over wrestling and read every backstage story, read every issue of The Observer, know what's going to happen before it happens, and basically just pull the rug out from under everybody. In its own way, that was pretty cool. Because I remember sitting there at my brother's house watching Mania 30 with him and a friend, and we were kind of bored by that Lesnar match because Taker was concussed early on, and Brock had to call the body of the match after that, and he wasn't used to that. And so when Brock hits the third F5, you know, we're sitting there just thinking, is Taker kicking out of another F5? And when the hand hits for the third time, we're just like, what?
We thought it was a mistake, actually. Brian and I were in New Orleans. We thought it was a mistake, and we just couldn't believe that happened. And you could hear a pin drop, Justin. It was that you know, shocking.
It was beautiful in its own way. And I realized that something very special had to be sacrificed to make that moment. But it's we as, you know, the know-it-all fan, we need those moments sometimes. You know, we need to have that cold water thrown in our face, and just go, huh? What? Huh? And just
it really did elevate Brock though, because it was kind of the summer of Brock after that. You know, it kind of. A lot of people are mad that it wasn't to a up-and-comer like a Bray Wyatt. It wasn't to somebody with that stature. And another part-timer in Brock, did he really need that? Would have been a question that everyone to this day, you know, will argue. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if not Brock, then who, you know?
And besides, Brock is, if anyone else had ended it, they would never be able to turn face. Because every guy that ended the streak, and they would always have that hanging over their head, whereas, you know, Lesnar does have that doomsday mystique about him. And as a friend of mine once said to me, he's a heel in real life. So to have Brock be the one to, you know, bust down everyone's childhood cherished entity, for lack of a better term, he was the guy to do it, because in theory, the guy who beats him would be the hero, unless it's Roman Reigns, which they tried doing that, and fans were like, no, please, Brock, win. And, you know, what a turnaround in 1 year. Now everyone wants Brock to kill this young guy. But imagine if Brock didn't break the streak. What if Roman was the one that did it 3 years later? Can you imagine the outrage?
Oh, man. Forget about it. Justin, what in your mind was The Undertaker's greatest match? Of course, people say Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 25. Your opinion on what was Taker's greatest Mania match?
His greatest Mania match is his greatest match, period, and that was the one with Shawn at 25. That was just a beautiful, well-done, back-and-forth match with... It's kind of cliche now, but there's a million finisher kickouts and a million false finishes, and it's been overdone to the point where, you know, it's like, okay, he's kicking out here. All right, he's kicking out here. Is that the finish? Okay, no, it wasn't. Okay, so he'll kick out of one more, and it takes you out of it. But that one is like, when Shawn kicked out of the first Tombstone, I'm thinking, oh my God, they might actually have him win this match. And it was like he had like a 30% chance when he had like a 10% chance before. But that match was just, other than Tigger landing on his head and almost dying at ringside when Sim Snuka didn't catch him, it was a perfect match. And I think Tigger's three best matches ever are the ones with Shawn. Both Mania matches and the first Hell in a Cell in 1997.
Yeah.
And And that one had the best ending possible because Taker murdered Shawn for like 30 straight minutes. Shawn almost bled to death, fell off the side of the cage, and then it ended with the best debut ever.
Yeah, it made Kane in one night. It just made Kane.
It presented him as an absolute equal to The Undertaker in just one moment. And it was the best way to transition Taker out of the Shawn angle into the Kane angle. And it came at the very end of a brutal, violent match that most people would never forget if they saw it.
No, definitely. Definitely Shawn and Undertaker have set the bar when it comes to Hell in a Cell. But, you know, talking about his greatest matches, my big question in terms of, I think everybody debates this and everybody has their own opinion on it. I would like to hear yours. What do you think is the key for Undertaker? Is it the man, Mark Calloway, or is it the creative that has helped make this character create its longevity the way it has? Because, you know, in terms of a cliche, we're all grown up. We don't really believe he's a dead guy anymore. He's not a zombie. But what key can you find out from observing the Undertaker as long as you have that's given him the ability to keep his longevity and redefine himself every single time?
That's actually a very good question, because in both cases, both elements are very important to the success of the Taker character. But I'm going to say it's the man more than the creative, because you've seen how many times creative has gotten behind somebody and they've given him, you know, the God push, or they've protected him, and maybe they didn't quite resonate. Whereas Undertaker, yeah, he had the creative behind him where he's no-selling moves and he beats Hogan and they give him everything. But he made it work because they asked a lot of him. It's like, okay, you need to no-sell, but you know, keep a blank face as you no-sell. You need to sit up at the right time. You need to walk a certain way to get, you know, with this sort of, you know, zombie-like gait. You need to do this. And he did everything. And he did it in a way that probably nobody else could have. He projected that menace inside of that cartoon character. And they gave him all these hoops, and he jumped through all of them with no problems. And it's the fact that it's one thing to put the hoops up. And you can put up hoops for anyone you want. You can put up as many as you want for somebody. And you can guide them through it. But you know, Taker was able to do everything on his own. I mean, yeah, he had great opponents who would sell for him. It's all a collaboration. But Taker more than did his part. Which is why I'm going to say that I'll give the nod slightly to him over the creative. Because while the creative was there, the man has to make it work. You know, can't all be smoke and mirrors.
And it's a great retrospective that you have on The Undertaker. Again, you know, you can find it. He's a writer for Fight Spirit magazine. It's on there. It's issue 145. It's a great read, Justin. So I recommend anybody Undertaker fan who is you know looking to maybe end up some closure because you're still not over it, but a good read about The Undertaker and his, you know, his career and what he meant to WWE in Justin's eyes. It's a great read. But listen, you know, going forward now, Undertaker, you know, we wish him well in retirement. We know that, you know, there's surgeries ahead for The Undertaker, so we wish him nothing but the best and thank him for entertaining us so much. But, you know, the entertainment aspect, you know, we get off of Raw where we're overseas in England, and it's probably the most lackluster one I've seen, especially from the fans' perspective. I told Brian, listen, Payback kind of messed things up with the whole superstar shakeup, but right now, Raw seems lackluster. Is it just me, or do you agree?
I think it definitely feels lackluster, but I can't think of any real specific reason other than maybe it's just like holding pattern theater right now. And they kind of go into these holding patterns like in the off seasons. I mean, Mania was just a month and a half ago. A few more months till SummerSlam, and Raw has up until SummerSlam are just secondary shows. They just had Payback. They're going to have Extreme Rules. They're going to have this whatever the hell Great Balls of Fire is going to be. I have no idea what that is. I don't know what kind of concept they have planned for that, if they have anything, or Vince was just in a Jerry Lee Lewis mood the day he came up with the name. But it's, I mean, and the London show is always going to be non-canon anyway. You know, it's just something
fans,
to entertain.
The fans are usually more, you know,
energetic,
you know?
Yeah, they seem really dull for the most part, and I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, but at the same time, you know, you're doing this dumb angle where it's Ambrose and Miz co-GMs for a night, and it's not going to lead to anything. It's just You know, it's a self-contained storyline that'll be wrapped up at 11:15 Eastern time. And it's hard to get excited about something that's not building to something bigger. You know, there's no... It's going to hit a dead end quickly enough, and then you're going to go to bed. Simple as that.
Well, if it hasn't hit that dead end yet, Justin, it, you know, for me, it hit pretty quickly at the very first hour of the show with the whole dual GM scenario. I mean, speaking of dumb angles, you know, you have this scenario where you have The Miz and Dean Ambrose basically rehashing a rivalry that they had on SmackDown for the Intercontinental Championship.
We're just watching on Monday nights.
Yeah. We're just watching now on Monday nights instead of Tuesdays on SmackDown Live. I want to get your opinion on that in terms of the WWE recycling their angles. And then speaking of angle, where's Kurt Angle been? I know he's not traveling overseas.
How do you tell the overseas fan that you're important, right? I mean...
Yeah, how do you tell them that you're important? But more importantly than that, I mean, Kurt's always has gone on saying how he wants to wrestle again. Is something like this leading to that? Or you think it's more of him just filling a void right now because they don't know what to do after Stephanie's taking some time off to be with the family? And obviously, Mick Foley's having hip surgery or had successful hip surgery.
Well, Foley's out of the company anyway. His contract expired, and I don't know if he really plans on coming back or not. At least, you know, immediate future or anything of that sort.
I stumped Justin. He doesn't even know how to answer what's going on with Kurt Angle.
I had a brain freeze for a second there. I'm trying to process one thing at a time here.
I'm sorry.
Well, if you come on again, you notice Brian is a multiple questioner, so, you know, you have to process one and then while trying to answer the other. So it's all right, Justin. It happens to some guests.
I only have two hands. I can only hold up one basket. But as far as Angle goes, obviously fans are happy to see him back, and then the response at the Hall of Fame was enormous. And you can see just the sheer joy in his eyes. He was so happy to be doing all the old goofy bits, the sexy Kurt bit, or pouring milk on himself. And you know, he was just having a blast, and you could tell. So Angle's the kind of guy who'll probably do anything you ask him to do.
Yeah, but aren't you surprised how they haven't made him do those kind of angles? I mean, we kind of got teased the night after Mania with Enzo and Cass, and I just, like, you know, he doesn't go on the overseas trip, which is fine. He wants to stay home with the family and he doesn't want to travel. But, you know, again, it kind of tells, you know, WWE tells the audience, well, listen, we can't take our GM and bring him to a show in London, which shows how important this Raw is. And then second of all, you know, where's the skits? Where's all that stuff? He seems to be MIA way too much on the show, which I would think would be entertaining when you would see him. You know, I think that would boost ratings if he was on more.
Well, actually, didn't Ambrose acknowledge on Raw that Angle's dog was sick?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's just, you know, still.
I mean, given a choice, I'd pick my dog over a wrestling show, but that's just me.
Well, it just shows how committed you are, Justin, where your priorities stand.
I think there's definitely a slower pace on the shows these days. Because you have all these 15-minute matches now, like at the top of the hour, six-man tag. It goes 15, 20 minutes, or a women's match, it goes 10 minutes. I think what made the Attitude Era a bit more easier to sit through is the fact that the matches, you know, weren't super long. And I'm not saying every Raw match is marathon length, but for 3 hours, you have a lot of space to fill. Which, I mean, you know, back to your point, you know, you could have Kurt Angle do more goofy stuff with, you know, a mid-carder that they want to get over, or a little backstage goofy bit or whatever. But obviously they don't, and they fill the show with more wrestling and more recaps, and it all just blends together after a while, and 3 hours is way too long to sit through a weekly wrestling show, as we learned watching Nitro 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know, it's a lot. Times have changed, but, you know, you talk about, you know, more wrestling and trying to fill it. The Cruiserweight division. I love the idea. I was a huge fan of the Cruiserweight Classic. In general, you know, right now they just have Austin Aries and Neville on the side of pieces of TJP now, which we need to call him, not TJ Perkins. Your thoughts so far, your grade on the Cruiserweight division on Raw?
Well, the action is fine. It's been a hard sell to the audience, well, certain parts of the audience. Especially when you have these brand new characters that have a little backstory. But I mean, you know, if we're getting a 5-minute Austin Aries match with, I don't know, Noam Dar or someone, then hey, great, you know, that's 5 minutes well spent with quality action. But, I mean, this whole purple ropes thing, you know, you're trying, if you have to tell the audience that it's special, then how special is it really? You know, it's, they're trying to dress up something that that they think needs dressing up. I mean, to me, just put Austin Aries out there with, you know, Mustafa Ali or whoever, you know, Drew Gulak. I don't care who you throw in there. Just have a great match. It's like Nitro back in the day. You know, they'd have an 8-man tag with 8 luchadors. You know, here's La Parca, here's Uvi, here's Lismark, here's all these guys. And they would just have a match. You need to say, this is a special match, you need to pay attention. No, they just let it exist. And guys got themselves over, especially La Parca when he became the chairman of WCW.
That was a great bit. I love that, actually. That was actually, for the first time I remember one of the luchadores showing some character in the sense of that. But speaking of characters, why Jeff was mentioning about the Cruiserweight Classic and now the Cruiserweight Division, which is on Raw, and they have 205 Live after SmackDown Live. It just feels like they're really splitting apart this whole Cruiserweight Division where they're trying to build characters, they're trying to get you invested in it, as if you don't know who these gentlemen are, which for most casual general fans, they don't. But, you know, we asked Aaron Riff from NoDQ.com, and I want to ask you the same question, too. Do you think the Cruiserweight Division, in terms of the talent they have with a guy like Adrian Neville and Austin Aries, would they be better off being a taped environment going back to Full Sail University? Because it seems like that crowd just was more enthusiastic. It was a smaller venue, obviously, but they seemed to be very on top of everything. And it just feels like the crowd after like a SmackDown Live just leave the building, so it doesn't give you that same type of dynamic. Would they be better off going back to Full Sail and taping this rather than doing it live?
Well, at the same time, I think you want to condition the main audience, you know, to get used to these guys and see who gets over with them, since they are ultimately, you know, the one to spend the most money on the product. So if you can get Austin Aries and Neville and then these kind of guys over with those fans, then you have something. I mean, the Full Sail fans aren't always the best barometer for wrestling. You know, you see people get over with them that just didn't get over on the main roster, whether it was like the vaudevillains. And I'm sure there's, you know, reasons for why people don't necessarily get over. I mean, Bayley was really big in NXT, and they've kind of bungled her on the main roster. You know, by cutting the same promo every week. I love wrestling as a fan. I want to be a wrestler. Yeah, well, so did everybody else on the roster, except for Goldberg and Lesnar.
Yeah, good point.
It's, you know, how fresh is that really? And especially when it's every week, and they bring Alexa out to call her out, and the fans are actually siding with Alexa. Like, yeah, shut up, Bill Bayley. I mean, you have a new topic to talk about. The main roster ultimately is going to be are the ones who decide, you know, what's over and what isn't, and it's up to Vince, if he really wants to push, you know, whatever they want based on their desires, which he doesn't always do, obviously.
Obviously.
And NXT is a good hardcore audience, a representation of what the full audience is and what the ones who spend the most money on the product are. I mean, Full Sail fans get it for free.
That's true, but wouldn't it be fair to say, too, if you look at WrestleMania now that people have been main eventing it, you look at the Finn Balor, you see the Seth Rollins, the Roman Reigns, who's now the face of WWE, they all came from the NXT brand. So, you know, in a way, I kind of agree with you. Yeah, it's true. They target a very smaller audience, a very smaller demographic, because us die hardcores love watching NXT. But when you hear a guy like Vince McMahon go out and say he doesn't think NXT can make money on the road, they've proven they can make money on the road. Are they selling at arenas? I mean, they set the bar when it comes to SummerSlam. They've set the bar for WrestleMania weekends the last couple of years. So I think it's 50-50 here. But I think when it comes to like what you said, Full Sail isn't necessarily the best measuring bar there. If you give that impression, like ECW at the time, it was a cult following in the East Coast around Philly. But when people saw that and they looked at it, they're like, wow, when that comes to my town, I want to see it. So to me, it's more just giving the illusion, you know, perception's reality. If you perceive the Cruiserweight Classic and how exciting it was and how the crowd was into it, you'd be excited to see it on a normal basis. Maybe, who knows, maybe before a SmackDown Live or before a Raw or something like that.
I think you would need a lot more NXT fans, you know, infesting the entire pay-per-view calendar rather than just the big four. Mm-hmm. They're all nuts for SummerSlam and Survivor Series because they were at TakeOver the night before and they make a weekend out of their destination weekends. And NXT does set the bar because obviously fans go to see them and they have tickets for, you know, Survivor Series or whatever the next night. I mean, are the fans that, you know, that nuts at Payback? Obviously they weren't for House of Horrors. And nor should they have been.
No, yeah, nor should they have been. Anybody who was is not a true fan.
No. Anyone who was should be medicated immediately.
They probably were watching that match.
They probably needed to be.
Don't you at least give, and this is where I'm going to, you know, like I said, I'm going to look at it in the other aspect as the WWE. I give them a little bit of credit for at least making an attempt at that? Was it a lot of stuff kind of like done really like overblown? Like, was there continuity with Randy Orton with the fridge, and then he made it to the arena kind of like the same time as Bray did? The whole limo going up to a house, you know, Randy shirtless before, you know, coming into the house, you know, instead of, you know, making it more believable. But I do tend to give him credit.
Why do you bring that up that he was shirtless?
I don't know. I just, you know.
Jesus, man.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. I do give him credit for trying to do it, although it, you know, kind of fell flat. But I
kind of.
But, you know, you look at Final Deletion, and you look at it because it's on Impact. And you look at it, Ring of Honor can get away with it. But don't you think somehow the WWE fans are kind of snobby because this is not their cup of tea, and we know that this is, you know, not believable. It's kind of like, you know, above them. Don't you think that's part of why, too, that the fans kind of didn't
it? Well, no, no. I'll say that the reason why, and I'll admit, I was a big fan of Final Deletion, but I was not a fan of House of Horrors, and there is a fundamental difference between the two. The Final Deletion and everything associated with it, and the Delete or Decay and all the Matt Hardy insanity, that had the sort of wink and nod to the camera at how insane all of this was. I mean, when you have Matt yelling, "It's a dilapidated boat!" You know, he's doing it because, you know, he's being absurd. The absurdity is being acknowledged. And that's it, because you're including the audience in on the joke. It was a joke that was ironically taken seriously by a lot of people, and because Matt played the role with such conviction. You know, he became Broken Matt. Jeff became Brother Nero. I mean, all the dumb stuff with the lawnmowers and the drone with, you know, the holographic Matt Hardy head on it. It's, you know, you're playing this for half comic effect, but you're saying this is our direction. And if you can stomach absurdity and laugh along with us, then we have something here. This was just two guys fighting in an empty house with one room that had dolls suspended from a ceiling. There is nothing really to get in on other than two guys punching each other. And it wasn't even that great of a brawl either. It was bare bones compared to Final Deletion. And that's my point, is that, you know, they were trying to be, you know, spooky and mystical, but there was nothing spooky or mystical about it. Oh, there's background music. That doesn't exist in any match other than the ones New Jack's in.
Yeah, exactly. and that's not for a PG audience at all either. But it's funny how you say it, Justin, like with the deletion thing, it had conviction behind it, but yet they had looking like panning at the camera, breaking the fourth wall, kind of saying, yes, this is kind of ridiculous, we're aware of it. But then, you know, going right back to The Undertaker, I mean, how much conviction was that? How are we supposed to believe that this guy is still this paranormal guy? He goes from being an Undertaker to an American badass, talking shit out of his mouth, and now he is back to the dead man type of thing. So in a sense, it's kind of hard to compare the two, wouldn't you say? I mean, how much conviction is there in the Undertaker character?
A lot, because Undertaker has this air about him.
Okay.
Where, he has this residual credibility anyway, because he's the Undertaker. He was there when Hogan was there, and Warrior was there, and Bret and Shawn. He was the last of his kind, so he's kind of grandfathered into the modern age. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, here's a guy who's 50 years old. He's almost 7 feet tall. He's wearing guy liner and a leather trench coat and a hat. And he has this look in his eye always. It's like, if you don't take me seriously, I will kill all of you. So it's like, okay, I'm going to take Undertaker pretty damn seriously then.
Unless you saw the Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And then you didn't take him seriously. You're like, what the heck is this? Where's the Undertaker?
Not so much not taking him seriously, but just, yeah, Taker's getting kind of old now. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for him no matter what, but I kind of rather just see him live a healthier life,
and you want to remember him for what he was or what he once was, rather than seeing a shell of himself. I mean, I think like us with wrestling fans, that's the last thing we want to see, Jeff. Right? We don't want to see our idols go to that path where we're like, we kind of wish they went away. We want them, like what Shawn Michaels did, leaving and having us wanting more.
Exactly.
But there's some though that you wonder, are they allowed to, should they be given the chance to decide when it is that they want to hang it up, and shouldn't be our decision? So that's it's kind of like the argument that we could all have, is like, you know, whether, you know, he chooses or we choose it, you know, it's winding down.
It is their decision, and then it's their career. It's what they want to do. If they want to retire young, retire old, you know, we have no say in that. I mean,
Justin, No, I'm sorry. Continue.
There can be this palpable feeling where it's like, okay, this should be the moment. But ultimately, you know, we're not in their head. We're not in their body. It's hard for some to let go. Guys like, you know, Ric Flair, who maybe can't let go for monetary reasons. And where you see guys who are still working indies that, you know, need the extra money. Or we see guys that are in the spotlight in the big company that are still holding on. And like, you know, 15 years past their peak, but they're still there because there's a big payday involved, or they love the roar of the crowd. That's up to them. You can make as much money as you want to make and as you're willing to make. If you want to cash in on your old brand, that's up to you. I mean, do I want to see guys in their 50s wrestling that I watched 20 years ago? No, it's not really it depends how you present them. Look at Goldberg. He came back in October, and there was a little bit of gaga there. It was like, wow, we haven't seen Goldberg in years. He looks jacked for his age. He has a match with Lesnar Survivor Series. That was kind of fun. He felt like a rip-off for some people. But I liked it because it was a surprise finish. And as time wore on, it's like, all right, Goldberg, wrap it up. And this is all in a 4 or 5 month stretch.
Yeah.
We grew tired of him quickly enough to the point where fans are chanting, go away at him after WrestleMania. 6 months ago, you know, he was the man. Now it's like, please leave.
Justin, so many stories in wrestling now. It's like before, you know, there was some time off and, you know, you could have a little respite, but now you have pay-per-view after pay-per-view and you have event, not only, you know, WWE, but just other brands out there. What story, let's say in the next few months or so, is something that's caught your attention that you really, you know, have your eyes on and, you know, maybe going to write about soon enough?
Well, as mentioned before, I'm pretty big on Braun Strowman. I know he's out temporarily with this elbow injury that's going to have him out maybe 4 to 8 weeks, which, you know, is pretty poor time because he was the hottest act on the show at this point.
He's going to be the main event most likely against Brock at, I just want to say, great balls of fire.
Well, there are apparently plans to do something with the Universal Belt earlier than usual.
Please,
oh, that still exists?
Do something with the Universal Belt. Do something with it.
Well, I'm not really sure about the full story, but I did read earlier there's apparently been a big meeting concerning the Universal title, almost like an emergency meeting. It may involve SummerSlam. Now, I don't know how true this is, but obviously Raw needs to have a big champion on it. And then, you know, having six guys fight for the Intercontinental title, yeah, that's one thing. Maybe you wait and have Braun go over him at SummerSlam. I mean, Braun's building up steam. Why not do it then? I mean, Braun's your over monster. Reigns is going to get booed no matter what. Although Vince is, you know, in town. Like, I have no problem with Reigns personally. I think he's very talented. I think he was dealt a bad hand. It was bad timing. He started the peak as Daniel Bryan got hurt and vacated the belt. The fans are still, you know, all in on Bryan. And a lot of bad has gone Roman's way that's not his fault. I appreciate what he does, but even I got to say, the fans don't want him to go with somebody else. Yeah. But they won't. But yet Braun's right there, and he's bigger than Roman. He may have more upside than Roman in some ways. You know, why not go Braun versus Brock at SummerSlam and have that be your colossal main event?
That would definitely sell out tickets. That would definitely intrigue me of wanting to see that, because as much as I used to butcher Braun Strowman and call him Braun Greenman, there's no doubt he's gained so much momentum. And here's the thing that I find too, and I kind of agree with you a little bit on this one too, Justin, is that, you know, I have nothing personally against Roman Reigns. I think he's a nice guy. The way he's done interviews, what he does, far beyond maybe the equivalent of John Cena, right? And the kids love him, and obviously the females love him as well. I think for me, at least, when he goes out there and presents himself as a character, for example, just one real quick example, the night after Raw, he's standing there, people are booing the hell out of him. He's standing there, he's eating it up for 10 minutes and then says, this is my yard, and drop the mic. I said to Jeff, that's probably one of his best promos he's ever done. The authenticity, the reality, even Stone Cold used to talk about this in his podcast. The mere fact that you can look at the camera and I can see conviction in your eyes. Is it more of the writing that's affecting Roman Reigns, or he's just not that kind of a talker? Because to me, when I see Roman Reigns do an interview, I'm like, wow, I want to hear more of that guy. Because as much as I don't like him as a character, at least I know who he is as a person. When he comes on the microphone in front of the WWE television, he just seems like a different person that I can't relate to. So that's what causes me to have so much resentment for him. Do you feel the same way, or do you think it's just the crowd just doesn't want him because the company's behind him?
I think there is a bit of rebelliousness that comes against him where it's just this it was that rolling ball of hatred that kept picking up steam. But then, I mean, that was 2 years ago, and they've had chances to, you know, tweak his character or present him in a different way. Other than, he's divisive. Some fans don't like him, but others do. And that same horse shit they keep trotting out for, is that like, oh, it's a traditional crowd. You know, of course they're going to boo John Cena. Really? Every crowd's a traditional crowd? Okay.
Exactly.
But, I mean, look at the Usos. Now, the Usos were uber annoying but up until last Legos. Year. Yeah, they'll just come out and shout randomly and dive over the top ropes. We got a flying Uso. And they had no depth to them, to themselves. Now they're cutting what sounds like their own promos on SmackDown. And I can't imagine any of the writers of the WWE hires writing an Uso promo for them. I can't picture it. I think the verbiage comes from them.
Fair point.
And they're so much cooler now.
Yeah, agreed.
They have a personality.
That's who Jimmy and Jey Uso are, or Jonathan and Joshua Fatu, whichever you prefer.
If Roman Reigns is getting heat, and we want to see more of those short, responses, you get that, and that's awesome. And then the week after that, though, he comes on, and he basically, is apologetic to the Undertaker, and we're going to see him be, just sympathetic towards everything he's done and the respect that he had. It's totally the opposite of the Roman Reigns leading up to WrestleMania. So I'm kind of like, man, that's the guy that I want to see. Build off of that, and then, you get back reverting to Roman Reigns that he's likable to the fans, and I think that's what the fans are rebelling against, is like, listen, we know we want to see a heel Roman, and we're going to love to boo the hell out of him, and it's going to make you cash.
Yeah, I actually just watched that segment today where Braun pushed the ambulance over, because I was showing my brother who hadn't seen it yet, and I watched the start of that interview where Cole was doing that sit down where he's like, well, it's a shame that Tigger had to retire, and I had mixed feelings about it. Like, you're telling him this is my yard now 2 months ago. And it's like, I think they get cold feet with Roman. They go a certain way with him, and Vince goes, no. He's my new babyface. He's my Austin. He's my Hogan. He's my Rock, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, nobody sees it but him.
Do they have, like, amnesia? That's how kind of like The Rock started out with that kind of heat, you know what I mean? This has been, like, something that's, attitude error. You've seen The Rock, they shoved him down our throats as his goody two-shoe, and we couldn't stand it. And they finally, turned him, and then he eventually became the face and maybe future president of the United States.
Yeah, that's true. But, look at it this way. If Roman did turn heel, and he embraced the full dickishness that he enjoyed going up to Mania, who would be your top babyface that you would push against him? Who would Vince get behind to the level he's gotten behind Roman? Probably not Dean Ambrose. Probably not AJ Styles.
Maybe Seth Rollins.
See, I think they've messed. Healthy? I think while they've messed up his Roman Reigns' babyface, I think they've messed up Seth Rollins' babyface, because I think that would have been the guy.
Seth Rollins, maybe, but he didn't actually turn face so much as another heel beat him up and took his privileges away. There wasn't an actual moment of, conciliation with, the babyface side of the roster. I mean, here's a guy that turned heel because he turned on his buddies because Hunter promised him a better life. And, he became an overprivileged schnot after that. He had Kane helping him. He had, Mercury and Noble helping him. And it's like, he had to turn face because Hunter beat him up. That's how he turned face. Because he thought Hunter was going to help him win a match, so Hunter pedigrees him. Okay, so now Rollins is a face, so... okay. There wasn't that actual moment where everyone decided, okay, Seth Rollins is a babyface now because he's right or they're wrong, or he saved the girl or whatever. There wasn't that moment.
Well, I think there was that moment when he did come back after injury, after that long period of time, and they did that special on the network of him himself. At that moment, I thought, okay, well, he's going to be a babyface, and then he turns around and shoves it down the fan's throat. I'm like, okay, well, they blew their opportunity here. Now it just doesn't seem real, doesn't seem authentic, but neither does Roman Reigns. And we talk about all the storylines that are going on now with Raw compared to SmackDown Live, which I think does a great job with storylines. It's apples and oranges. It's night and day, and I think that's why distinctively it's fair for me to say, I don't know if you agree with me, Justin, I know Jeff is kind of between this but also feels the same way too, that SmackDown Live is the better show and the better program. If you want stars to kind of elevate themselves to the next level, you're better off watching SmackDown Live.
AJ Styles said it best, they make them and Raw takes them.
Well, yeah, because Raw is the A show, no matter how much they put over this divide between the two shows. It's an even split. It's not an even split, and it never has been. You know, Raw is always on the night after a pay-per-view. If SmackDown's on, if SmackDown has Backlash, it'll be two nights later. Or back in the day, it was three or four nights after a pay-per-view that they would have their show. And it's, you know, so and Monday night's wrestling night, so Raw will always have priority. And then, even though SmackDown is, you know, the show for the hardcore fan, the one that caters to the, you know, the most diehard of their audience, it is still secondary. And honestly, I have not watched a single SmackDown since the whole JBL and Mara story came out. It's just, I can't sit there and listen to JBL. I really can't.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, and then you watch Bring It to the Table, too. It'll anger you, too. It's
just I don't.
His response to, I'm sorry, he's literally bullying Rosenberg on the thing. And, like, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, but Rosenberg sucks.
Oh, please. Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
But no, of course, I mean, the whole, and it's a shame too, Justin, that the mere fact that it's JBL, and hey, I've had the same thing too, where, if, you know, I've had enough of Michael Cole, I had enough of Byron Saxton, now he's on SmackDown Live, and you have David Otunga, when he comes back from his movie that's going straight to DVD, to come back to that type of thing. To me, the two-man commentary was the way to go. This whole three- or four-man team makes no sense to me whatsoever. But it's a shame, though, Justin, because a lot of great quality is going on SmackDown Live. And maybe you could just mute it and just not listen to the commentary and just watch it for a show, and you'll probably enjoy it a lot better.
No, but I understand where you're coming from, though. That's good on you there to, you know, to stick by your guns there.
Also, I'm never home Tuesdays, and it's like, so it just works out that way.
Yeah.
I just don't DVR it anymore, because, you know, screw it.
Well, Justin, you obviously a very talented writer, and your stuff is on Fight Spirit magazine. This is a great piece on The Undertaker that you have, issue 145. Make sure you check it out. It's out there now. Thank you for sending it to us and, you know, getting us to glance at this, because it's really a great job in your retrospective on The Undertaker. Also, he's a contributing writer for What Culture. Here you're going to be doing more stuff for that as well. And also, you can follow him on Twitter at JRH Writing. And, you know, Justin, just before you go, Brian here's got one final question for you.
Yeah, before you go, Justin, I want to ask you this. I usually ask in the beginning, but, you know, we're just getting so well and conversing about The Undertaker and the events going on between storylines of SmackDown, Raw, the Cruiserweight division. My main thing is, Jeff and I do this because we love it. We're wrestling fans at true heart. We never grew out of it. My thing to you is, what drew you to want to pursue this now? Is this is your source of income? This is your career. This is your livelihood. It's your labor of love. What drew you to want to continue this and make this, you know, basically what you do for a living?
Well, I worked retail for a number of years, and I just, you know,
God bless you for that. God bless you. Jeff and I did as well.
Yep. Is there a club we can join for that?
Well, it actually wasn't, you know, arduous or anything. I actually made a pretty good wage off of it. But it was the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. And I just want to do something different. And I've always been a creative person. I just love writing little different things. And I thought, you know, maybe I can, you know, make something out of this. And in 2009, I reached out to a man named Eric Gargiulo. He used to be a shoe interview conductor, and he was actually an announcer for Combat Zone Wrestling in Philly and New Jersey. And he ran a blog. He runs a blog called Camel Clutch Blog. And he brought me on board. He kind of mentored me a little bit, and then I started just writing frequently, and I make a lot of money at first, but eventually it's just like I got my name out there. I started, you know, immersing myself deeper into the product and looking at little subtleties and nuances that I never really looked at before, and just I got better at it over time, just because I put in the effort and the practice, and it's been its own reward in a lot of ways even before I started making money. It's made me a lot more aware of things, and it's actually very rewarding if you do get into it.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, and I think me and Brian are kind of like, you know, are rewarded too, because, you know, you get to meet great people, talented people, and get a chance to talk to people that are very knowledgeable about, you know, professional wrestling. And
not just knowledgeable, Jeff. I think, you know, talking to Justin, you can definitely tell when we talk about this, just the passion. There's definitely passion there and a sense of desire when we
read
talk
his articles.
About it.
It's there.
Yeah,
know.
It's there. You read about this and this whole scenario with what he wrote about The Undertaker, you know, encompasses what any wrestling fan would probably think of too when they try to dissect and break down an illustrious career and a bona fide Hall of Famer as The Undertaker.
Well, yeah, you do it justice, my friend. Very good job on
and
it.
And we left him speechless because, you know what? He's a humble guy.
He's not used to compliments, so we get it. We get it, Justin. He's used to getting bullied like Mauro Ranallo. So, you know, we're actually throwing some bouquets at your way.
I was actually getting a sip of Monster Energy drink at that point, so I couldn't speak.
Oh, okay. So.
Justin, we will be May 20th in Rahway, New Jersey. We will be there for WrestlePro. I sent the invite to you, too. So if you do want to make your way there, feel more than welcome to, man.
Well, I'll definitely look into it. I'm not sure what I'm doing that day yet, but if it's free, I'd be more than happy to go.
I know what you're doing that day, Justin. You're going to WrestlePro. That's what you're doing. I can foresee the future. Invite. Nah, I know. We'd definitely love to have you there and, you know, bring you on as well, as we're going to be doing the show from there as well. But, again, you know, it's just an exciting time talking to you and really breaking down everything that's going on in the world of professional wrestling, because a lot of people like to believe that WWE is the only universe out there, when there's actually more out there to be aware of, and the future looks bright for talent on the independent scene.
Yeah, Justin, thank you so much, man, and, you know, wish you the very best.
Thank you for having me on, guys. I wish you the best as well.
And a special thanks goes out to Justin Henry. Again, you guys want to read everything he's writing. You know, he's a contributor to Fighting Spirit magazine, also What Culture. He does a great retrospective on the illustrious career of the Bona Fide Hall of Famer, The Undertaker. Great piece there, very in-depth. I mean, if you're a fan of The Undertaker, I mean, who isn't? He does a great job of describing not only the beginning of his career, but towards the tail end. And Godspeed to The Undertaker. I think we can't say enough thank you, Taker. If that was his last match, most likely, what a way to go. And what a great man, not just The Undertaker, but Mark Calloway as well. You guys can catch him on Twitter at JRHWriting. If you guys want to see what he's going to be up to in terms of any other thing in the future in terms of storyline. He mentioned Braun Strowman might be the next piece he writes about.
Yeah, no, so, you know, go check him out and support him, because he really is a very talented writer. Brian, I am so jealous, because this whole time we've had Justin on, I've been stewing, and I've been looking at you, and I was going to do it for the opening monologue, but yeah. I've been stewing and I've been boiling, because while I was in New York City working my jobber job, you were out on the, you know, experiencing Ashley Graham. And I got to ask you a question. How was that, my friend? Those Facebook pictures, wow. Hubba hubba.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed the Facebook pictures. I post them on Twitter as well, and in the High Spot Podcast retweeted them. So you guys enjoy them for your pleasure there.
Viewing pleasure.
Because it was a joy, you know, walking up there, and you know, I said to myself, hey, why not? You know, it kind of came up, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And
maybe you're very determined.
You know what? Maybe we can get her on the guest, and that's what we'll be doing, trying to get Ashley Graham as a guest on the High Spot Podcast. Why not, folks? Why not? But it's great. She seems to be a very approachable person. I mean, when you get past the fact that she's drop dead gorgeous, she looks beautiful, and you stop gawking and staring. And the funny thing is about that, when I was in line waiting, I felt so out of place, because there was a gigantic line of women.
A lot of women there. A lot of female.
Basically, it was all females.
You didn't get any numbers? Any girl there piqued your interest there?
No. Oh, yeah, piqued my interest, of course. But at the same time, I don't want to lose my place in line.
Did you give the trend center the time of day?
They? Oh, no, they completely rejected me. My ugly mug, Jeff, forget about it. No.
Oh, my
but again,
friend, my
you know,
friend,
what's the point if I know what the answer is going to be anyway?
But again, I saw that dress that Ashley Graham was wearing. Whew.
Oh, beautiful. I mean, there's no doubt she knows fashion. I went up to her, shook her hand. She's like, she liked my hair. And I was like, hey, I mean, thanks, Moody Barber, for that. Because, yeah, I owe him for that haircut, because that's the only thing that makes me look presentable nowadays with my disgusting beard and facial features. But again, meeting Ashley Graham was great, talking to her for a little bit. And you could just tell, like, the fans are crying and, you know, they're tearing up and they're emotional around her. It was kind of the equivalent when I met Chris Jericho for the first time at one of his book signings. I was like, you know what?
You're so nonchalant about it.
This person's a human being. But here's the truth, though, Jeff. This person's a human being. So is Ashley Graham. What they do is basically at a higher scale. Obviously, that's where we want to get to.
What does Chris Jericho say? At the end of the day, they're just a regular person. Like,
just regular people.
Just,
you know?
Rich.
And so for me, it'd be a disservice to myself to go up to them and be like, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. And say Ashley Graham to tell her the same thing.
Yeah.
not to tell just Chris Jericho he's beautiful, but to tell Ashley Graham the same thing as well. It's just great, very impressionable. It was a pleasure meeting her. And the thing is, a lot of people say when you meet these types of so-called celebrities, try not to, because it disappoints you. Well, I've been very fortunate in meeting Chris Jericho, meeting guys like AJ Styles, meeting people that we've met at WrestleCon, for example. You know, Carly Perez was another exception to the sweetheart of a person. And then meeting Ashley Graham just kind of reestablished the fact that, hey, they're people, they're under people, but again, they're good-hearted people. I told her, and I spoke for you as well, most likely, we admire her work ethic, we admire what she does, she speaks her mind, she stands for what she believes in, and that's why we love to have her on the show. So we're definitely going to be working on that.
If you could get that I would probably, you know, kiss the ground you walk on for the rest of your...
You do that anyway.
...freaking life. And, you know, so Asher Graham, folks, ladies and gentlemen, congratulations to the trendsetter for going out there to Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey. And how's the book? Are you going to read it? Or are you just...
No, the book's not even mine. I know a buddy from Ridgewood. I basically just borrowed his book.
Really?
Yeah.
And you got the signature.
You got the signature.
Good job, my friend.
Because he couldn't do it. He was working.
Wow.
So it's like, you take my book and just sound like, sure, I'll take your book down there as long as I get a photo and get to meet Ashley Graham. Why not?
Trendsetter, that is why you are the brains of this operation.
Try to be, you know? try to hustle any way you can. Right?
I like that, man. Good job, man. So you have to meet her, take a picture, and it didn't cost you a dime.
That's
freaking perfect. That's awesome. Here, I thought you spent like $30, $45, but you didn't. So awesome.
I would have if I needed to, yeah, but again.
All right, we're going to wrap this up, Brian. Another great story from the Trendsetter. So we may do a little segment called Trendsetter Stories. So
oh, I better get some stories going.
So we might do that. But wrapping up the show again, Justin Henry, thank you so much for joining the show. Just real quick, Ring of Honor, May 12th, which is, you know, this Friday night, War of the Worlds. Cody Rhodes is going to headline that matchup. Mm-hmm. So check it out. Ring of Honor doing their thing. And very interesting, Sinclair Broadcasting, you know, brought a lot of media. And, you know, hopefully that means good things for Ring of Honor, because we'll see if they can do maybe a cable deal somewhere. But, you know, hopefully the future's bright for Ring of Honor, because they deserve it. And, you know, they're going to lose a couple guys here in the future with maybe like Adam Cole. But if they can get some people there and make Ring of Honor a strong number two, because let me tell you, Impact is okay, but, you know, Ring of Honor should be the number two brand.
I think right now there's no distinct number two brand. So, yeah, it's definitely open for a company like Ring of Honor. But ultimately, it's not about competing with the WWE. You're never going to compete with that type of money and that type of payroll. What I want Ring of Honor, what I would like Impact, what I would like all the independent circles, especially WrestlePro, which we'll cover on May 20th, is the mere fact of don't be like them, be your own entity. And you're seeing that nowadays.
Be an alternative, too.
Be an alternative. We don't have to be the same thing. You know, just different package, different presentation, and give us something that we haven't seen before. And I think the crowds will really be behind it. So that's what we're seeing nowadays. I think independent promotions are starting to get that message. And finally, we're starting to see and reap the benefits of it.
Yeah, and if this is true, you know, shout out goes to JR, who could be the voice, lead voice for the women's tournament. That'll be great, and I would love to
see
him
back.
You can
ask for a more perfect voice to debut that type of tournament.
Who'd be the female that you would want to be there as the analyst?
First person that pops into mind, but I don't know if she's done it before, Trish Stratus.
Trish, huh? Yeah.
She has a great relationship with JR. They have a great rapport together. I would like to see, you know, Trish Stratus do that possibly.
Trish, okay, it's pretty good. I really don't know who would be. I'd probably have to think about it, but I don't know. You think Lita would be good for it?
You know, I think Lita's good on the pre and posts. And it's not a knock on her, but I don't think she's comfortable with that type of fast pace. I think Trish could do it, though, because she came from a world of, you know, being a fitness model to do that show Access that we saw before with Jonathan Coachman. Had a great rapport. I think she would just do a better job. But again, you know, it's up in the air. I don't think Lita would fit that part, though.
All right, so interesting. Hopefully JR, you know, does do that, and he said he has some projects. So recently signed a new WWE deal, so we'll see if he is a lead voice for the women's tournament. And then closing, No Mercy comes back. It's been a while, and it'll be September 24th in L.A. at the Staples Center. So again, September 24th, if you're in L.A., go check out No Mercy. It is a Raw brand event. So, Brian, listen, man, great show again.
Definitely.
And listen, again, we will be WrestlePro May 20th. We'll have lots of stuff there. You know, come say hi. Don't be scared. The Trendsetter doesn't bite in public. And, you know, just again, make sure you head down to WrestlePro. Cody Rhodes, Joey Janela. We're going to also have, you know, Kevin Matthews, Mario Bacara. It's going to be a full lineup too. Colt Cabana. Hey, Colt Cabana, breaking the fourth wall. He'll be there. So It's going to be a great night also too. We'll also do some prizes with subscribe to the show on iTunes and tweet it back to us. And the winner, who, if you are present there at WrestlePro, will win two tickets to Keyport June 10th. So that's going to be our little giveaway for the High Spot Podcast.
Definitely.
Plus, I promise you, surprises. Tons of surprises. So keep listening to the show for further updates. And Brian, I get to say it. We are WrestlePro.
Exactly. We are WrestlePro. And we are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. You guys can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as iTunes, Google Play, Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and also if you want to listen to the show, go to RussellProOnline.com and you can hear our show there. Hear the Big Guy Ryback's podcast, Pat Buck's podcast, our boy Dave Sturcio's podcast is on there as well.
Destruction 101.
So great to be associated with all those great talent there, and hopefully this is just the beginning. And I wouldn't even say at this point just the beginning. I think it's the right path and the right road to be associated with a great company like Russell Pro. Thank you, Pat Buck, for that. And, you know, if you guys have enjoyed this episode, then you guys are going to be excited for next week when that comes along and we start bringing down everything that the Jersey Dragon crew can do for you, as we always try to. So after you've listened to this episode and you finish going to all the social media sites to listen to us, you're going to realize that life is just
too sweet. We are Russell Pro.